Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, on location. And we're going to be sharing with you today the absolutely latest, most important information of how to slow down and reverse the aging process, prevent or overcome disease using natural techniques. I do not oppose any medical procedure that can save your life. I only oppose those procedures that are not efficacious and very toxic, but are done because, well, it's been accepted and is not criticized. Into that a little later when I do a commentary. Some medications that can help you. If there's a procedure that makes a difference, like heart transplant or pacemaker, there are favors. Acute has benefit. Chronic care is a failure in American medicine. Treating cancer, heart disease, diabetes, alleged illnesses, inflammatory conditions, children's conditions. This is where medicine fails, could succeed, but chooses not to change its methods. So we'll talk about that today. From our audio file, we're going to talk about a professor. He's been on this program, Jeffrey Sachs from Columbia University. It's not a respect for Jeffrey Sachs. He's a reasonable and responsible scholar. He doesn't make up his mind, then go and get cherry-pick some facts to support it. He all the facts, all the evidence, then comes to a determination based upon that. Well, he appeared on MSNBC, Jerry in the morning, and he made some statements that stunned them. I mean, the kind of thing that you would hear on this program. If he were appearing here, and I had an admiral on about why we need, you know, to have and take the fight to the enemy. This whole militarization of people's minds is insidious. We're going to play that, and we're going to have a person who recorded this, interesting guy, and he has some. I think some extremely insightful observations on this. Also, I'm going to put a short clip from General Wesley Clark, where he's told, he was a former commander and a top general in the American Armed Forces, and he says that he was told by a person, a general that used to work under him in the Defense Department, Pentagon, that the United States had already planned to invade 7 countries in 5 years. Why? Why are we invading these, he says, and the guy says, I don't know. What does it mean to you, and this is our talk back question, when our entire military-industrial complex, with malice aforethought, determines that they're going to bomb countries into oblivion, go in and have regime change, throw out the people who are there, and put our puppets in their place in sovereign nations who do not represent any threat whatsoever to the United States, or anyone else for that matter. But you got to hear him say it. And the media has never once followed up on this. I've not heard him interviewed by the media. And what does he believe this means? So we're really at the brink of making some foolish errors. And that's half the equation. The other equation is the people that we're antagonizing, how will they respond? And I believe that we have pushed Russia about as far as we can push Russia without them engaging in some measured response. The trouble is any response whatsoever from Russia, anything, will be perceived by Israel and the United States and Saudi Arabia as an act of war. And with the mindset of this current president and the people around him, Bolton, well, you understand what's being said, that they will retaliate immediately and with full force without any measure of constraint. And most of Congress will go right along with it, unfortunately, and a substantial amount of the American public. And the media will be evenly split. Those who use this as an advantage to attack the president as an opportunity to support him. All this is such a foolish kabuki that we're seeing. We're also going to have, if time permits, a discussion on Monsanto's weed killer and why it's still allowed. So we have a lot to share today and talk back, but let's begin by looking at a study from the University of Virginia. Now, breast cancer is the second leading cause of death in women, and it's expected to claim about 40,000 lives this year. And we don't seem to be doing a lot in the larger community of women to prevent it. In fact, there is a segment of American society, generally in women over the age of 30, who are aware of organic foods, healthier diet, no alcohol, and eating the right combination of foods. They're very up on this, plus exercising and de-stressing. So they're doing a lot to prevent breast cancer. And they should be the model for what others, especially younger people, follow. But a lot of people still choose to do things that actually can promote breast cancer. This study said, there's something you're all missing. What is it? The microbiome. Now, a microbiome is the bacteria, the good bacteria, that reside in your gut. But bacteria are all over your body, not just in the gut. But they found that the quality of that bacteria directly impacts breast cancer. And the research now confirms the link between gut microbiome and the immune system health. Now, the billions, hundreds of billions of good bacteria in your gut, a community, create what we call the gut flora. And living in a digestive tract and is essential for proper immunity and brain health and digestive health and even emotional well-being. People who have more toxic bacteria tend to be more depressed, have more heart disease and cancer. People who have a good diet and as a result are feeding the good bacteria in your gut, they tend to be more optimistic and healthy. So there's a direct relationship to your mood and food and the bacteria are part of the food. So researchers have found the benefit of bacteria, the good bacteria, like if you ate beets or cabbage, sauerkraut, fermented foods, miso, that protects against pathogens, helps with digestion and absorption of nutrients, reduces levels of pro-inflammatory molecules, and even helps regulate mood. So, could you imagine, but it's a fact, that up to 80% of your entire immune system is located in your gut. And while 80% of vital the transmitters in the brain that communicate one to another, the neurotransmitters, these are the body's chemical messengers, are produced in your gut as well. However, the balance between friendly bacteria and infection-causing pathogenic bacteria is going to be determined by you. If you disrupt your good bacteria by eating hot dogs and hamburgers and pizzas and taking alcohol, and then that gut bacteria is going to be associated with an astonishing array of serious health issues, diabetes, obesity, inflammatory bowel disease, atherosclerosis, even stroke. So the takeaway message is this. We have 10 times more bacteria in our body than we have cells. And that means we have hundreds of trillions of bacteria. Everything that we eat will manifest in either a good or bad bacteria. And there generally takes about a 3-month period to change over, if you're really diligent in detoxification, from bad to good. And juicing, like green juices in particular, really helps speed up that whole process. Vitamin C helps as well. So it's just, and it's also helping protect you against. From the Karolinska Institute in Sweden, if you eat nuts on a daily basis, you're more likely to have a normal heart rhythm and not a heart rhythm irregular like atrial fibrillation. And millions of Americans, a lot of long-distance athletes, a lot of marathon runners, probably one-third of all marathon runners end up with AFib. And AFib can be reversed. It can be corrected. Otherwise, you're going to have to take blood thinners, and that has a lot of problems with it. There are natural blood thinners, but your doctor almost never recommends eating beets, onions, garlic, shallots, celery juice, green apple juice, vitamin C, vitamin E. These all thin your blood. They do the same thing, but without any harmful side effects and with very good beneficial effects. So here's the takeaway message. Eating several servings of nuts, walnuts or pecans or pistachios, almonds, every week helps lower the risk of developing a heart rhythm irregularity, AFib. And it's also called a heart flutter. And it finds it's very powerful, and it's in the peer-reviewed journal Heart. Now, that's really terrific. So eat all of the healthy, and I prefer if people ate raw, not the cooked and deep-fried nuts with salt and trans fats, but raw nuts. Or the nut butters would do just as well. And it reduces your risk also of cardiovascular disease. In fact, in this study, they looked at 61,000 people between 45 and 83 and then followed them for 17 years. And they came up with this. That's a very good study. So that's big. And we have millions of people in America with AFib. You see the ads on television all the time. From the University of Otago, which is in New Zealand, they found that raw fruits and vegetables provide better mental health outcomes. And so it's kind of a simple message. And eat more raw fruits and vegetables and feel better, have better moods, be in a better disposition. And it's true because you're getting antioxidants and phytonutrients, you're getting chlorophyll, you're getting everything that we need to protect ourselves in the fruits and vegetables that you're consuming. And that directly impacts your mental health. I've seen it. Tomorrow you're going to hear from a group of people, all of whom, every one of them had, unknown to me, they had all these medical conditions. And then you'll get to see just with 1 week of a fruit and vegetable-based diet, lots of juices, how that impacted them. Everything from sleep habits and fatigue issues and mental clarity and cognition and pain, everything benefited. Every condition was improved. And that's what this study is showing also. Now, from the University College of London comes a study about, does sugar make you sad? And the answer is, yes. Yes, it's true. I mean, people love the idea of, you know, having something sweet, like a cupcake with sugar frosting and or fluffy vanilla icing. That'll put a smile on some people's faces, but you're also going to have a lot of problems inside the body. There's an article published in the peer-reviewed journal, Scientific Reports, where they found a direct link between a diet of sugar and common mental disorders. The World Health Organization recommends that people reduce their daily intake of sugars, all sugars, to less than 5% of their total energy intake. I would agree with that. I think that's good advice. However, people in the United States and the United Kingdom consume double, even triple, the amount of sugar that other countries do. And 3/4 of the sugar that you eat is consumed in beverages and cakes and things that you're not making yourself. Even ketchup has an enormous amount of sugar. And they say that that can cause you to suffer from common mental disorders, like mood and anxiety disorders, where you're more depressed or you're more anxious. Now take a look, as Vedder College did, at how many people in the United States suffer from depression. They looked at 6 countries, and America had the most depression. Anxiety, we had the most depression. And 25% of all women between 25 and 45 are taking some form of antipsychotic medication or antidepressant medication. And guess what the side effects of taking the drugs are? Side effects of taking an antidepressant, depression. Anti-anxiety drug, anxiety. So there is a definite connection between sugar and inflammation, inflammation in the brain, inflammation in the gut, inflammation in the heart. So you don't want to be having all that sugar. And just from my own research, dopamine is another possible culprit. And because dopamine, which is a brain chemical involved in a reward system, and dopamine is also thought to influence mood. And addiction is itself associated with a higher risk of developing a mood disorder. So when you're taking something you think is a reward, sugar, something that is something that gives you pleasure, you're triggering that dopamine flash, and that can cause addictive behavior. But a separate study from the University of Guelph in Canada shows that sugar increases the risk of opiate addiction. That's right. So the question is, could a diet high in refined sugars, the average American diet, make children and adults more susceptible to opiate addiction and overdose? And the answer is, it could. Well, just in the last year, 20,000 people died of fentanyl-related overdoses in the United States. In Canada, there were at least 2,800 opiate-related deaths. And so far, over 1,000 people have died of illicit drug overdoses just in the British Columbia. And high schools are stocking up on the overdose-reversing drug, naloxone. And universities are training staff to administer the drug. But nobody's talking about sugar. And yet there's a substantial experimental evidence that refined sugars can promote addictive behavior by activating the brain's reward centers in much the same way as addictive drugs. And opiate abuse is also associated with poor dietary habits, including preferences for sugar-rich foods, as well as being almost always malnourished. And these connections have led to questions of whether excessive consumption of refined carbohydrates and sugars can lead to opiate addiction. And yeah, it does. And including high fructose corn syrup. In fact, high fructose corn syrup in one experiment in the lab altered rats' neural and behavioral responses to semi-synthetic opiate, OxyContin. And findings suggest that a diet high in corn sugar can damage the reward associated with OxyContin and therefore encourages consumption of high quantities of the drug. So get off the high fructose corn syrup. Get off the refined white sugars. If you want something sweet, try stevia, or try, you know, a honey, organic raw honey. We don't want people taking in the OxyContin and Percocet and Percodan. We don't want that, because oxycodone is also highly addictive and has impacted the lives of millions of Americans, and now they're dying from it, and nothing's really being done about it. And finally, from Lund University in Sweden, remember I talk about why you have to keep your arteries clean and your epithelial tissue always rejuvenated and smooth so blood can flow through those veins and arteries without being impeded by blockages? Well, this study is about unstable atherosclerotic plaque. That's your buildup. That's your diet. And they say it's similar to cancer. Now, this is brand new, just out today. European Heart Journal, highly reputed journal, reveals similarities between changes in metabolism observed in unstable atherosclerotic plaque and in cancer cells. An unstable atherosclerotic plaque is vulnerable to rupture, which can cause clots that result in heart attack and stroke. And there are currently no precise methods to identify and effectively treat high-risk plaque. And they're showing that it's not so dissimilar. The altered metabolism, quote, we have identified a high-risk plaque is also present in cancer cells. And just as the metabolism in cancer cells is reprogrammed to be able to digest sugar quickly, the sugar uptake of the dangerous plaque seems to be greater than that of stable plaque. So both conditions then would benefit if you went on a low-sugar diet. That would help you live a longer life. I'm Gary Nall. We're 21 minutes into our program. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay.
Whoa, oh, mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be. No. Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east. Whoa, mercy, mercy me.
For all of our listeners yesterday in our syndicated shows, you heard a program in different segments talking about the bombing and the justification. And even though it's after the fact, the first reporter on the scene, the highly regarded English investigative journalist Robert Fisk, said that after interviewing the medical personnel and people around the hospital, that there is no proof that there was any form of not a sarin gas nor a gas, but rather it was from the bombardment in the area. And you got to look at America at that. You got to look at the terrorists, and it created dust storm, and there was already a high wind blowing. And people, when they hear any form of alarm, they go into the cellars. They go into tubes. They hide themselves. And that's where they were kind of with all this mass coming in and sand. And it's hard to breathe. And that's where the hospital was treating them. So what this means is, now that there are other groups on the ground, multiple groups from all around the world investigating this, and already this morning I'm hearing that they're not finding any verification of missile attacks, and it was all propagandized by the White Helmets, which is purely a terror propaganda organization we pay for and we support. And when was the last time anyone in the media, anyone, did an original investigative report of White Helmets, as we have, and had people on who've done so, and show that it's a terrorist organization and not a benevolent organization? In any case, so let's see what happens. But we went out there and started doing all that bombing, 100 missiles that we, the American public, paid for that could have caused Russia to overreact to and fired on the ships where those missiles were coming from. And then that could have led to a much larger confrontation, which Israel wants and others want. But Russia, to its credit, did not. So what can we learn from that? I'm going to play a part now of a program that itself has a person has some comments, and then you'll hear what Jeffrey Sachs has to say. And this is the kind of information from the kind of person that is rare in the main media. And I'll bet he doesn't get invited back. Listen in, please.
But now I'm going to show you something that's got accidentally accidentally got let out on MSNBC.
Oh.
And so here you go. This happened last Friday on the morning Joe Ball.
So Jeffrey Sachs, chime in. This is very different.
First of all, I'm like, who's Jeffrey Sachs? I watch MSNBC all the time. I don't ever remember seeing this guy. Why? What? And I'm like, oh, so there's a new guy. I'm like, I'm thinking, did the CIA just pull a new guy out to push the war? Who is this guy? And listen to what he says. And now you know why you're never going to see him on MSNBC. Here it comes.
Than just a war between two countries. This is as convoluted as it gets and could get out of control. I don't think people might really conceptualize, maybe even not this president, how out of control this could escalate.
It's true, but I think we have to step back and not put this in partisan terms. This is a U.S. mistake that started 7 years ago. And I remember the day on your show when President Obama said, Assad must go. Mm-hmm. And I looked at you and Joe and I said, huh? How's he going to do that? Where's the policy for that?
Right.
And we know they sent in the CIA to overthrow Assad. The CIA and Saudi Arabia together in covert operations tried to overthrow Assad. It was a disaster. Eventually, it brought in both ISIS as a splinter group to the jihadists that went in. It also brought in Russia. So we have been digging deeper and deeper and deeper. What we should do now is get out and not continue to throw missiles, not have a confrontation with Russia. 7 years has been a disaster under Obama, continuing under Trump. This is what I would call the permanent state. This is the CIA. This is the Pentagon wanting to.
So he said this is the permanent state, meaning it doesn't matter who's elected. This is the CIA and the NSA. This is the deep state. Other people refer to it as the deep state, the intelligence community. He calls it the permanent state, which I like that because it lets you know that this is the permanent war machine. And it doesn't matter who's the president or who's in power. These are the people in power, the permanent state, the war machine. That's what he means. And listen, he goes on.
No way to do that. And so we have made a proxy war in Syria. It's killed 500,000 people, displaced 10 million, and I'll say predictably so, because I predicted it 7 years ago that there was no way to do this and that it would make a complete chaos. So what I would plead to President Trump is get out, like his instinct told him,
by
the way.
Before, yeah.
That was his instinct, right. But then all the establishment, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Pentagon, everybody said, no, that's irresponsible. But his instinct is right. Get out. We've done it.
This is unbelievable. He's saying everybody, New York Times, Washington Post, everything else. He's laying it down. And you see the stunned look at like, oh, my God, this guy, somebody forgot to pay this guy. Somebody, is this guy not under contract? Does he not know? You just brought in someone off the street. They're going to tell you the truth. What are you doing? Look at them all just stunned sitting there like this is not how it's supposed to go. Here we go.
Damage 7 years. And now we really risk a confrontation with Russia that is extraordinarily dangerous, reckless.
Admiral Stavridis, President Trump has
reckless. So there's a guy laying it down, Jeffrey Sachs from Columbia University. And that's stunning. That's stunning. And it's funny that they all just don't go, wait a minute, we started this war. It was the CIA that went. It wasn't a natural uprising. No. You mean all the stuff that we shouldn't be doing this. This is actually us committing war crimes. And this is us breaking international laws. Yes, we're breaking the international law by going into someone else's sovereign country and bombing them. We tried to overthrow Syria in the 50s. We did overthrow Iran in the 50s. And then we installed a puppet called the Shah, who was a repressive right authoritarian. And the people rebelled against him. And that's how we had the Ayatollah. Cool. So now they throw it to a guy who's been paid to advocate for war. And he's a colonel. And let's hear all the BS he has. So they go right from Jeffrey Sachs to this guy.
Dangerous. Reckless.
Admiral Stavridis, President Trump has said.
He's not a colonel, he's an admiral. So they go to an admiral. Here we go.
Going back now several months, that we should get out of Syria. That was his advice to Barack Obama many years ago, get out of Syria. What are the consequences if you walk away right now from Syria without responding to a chemical attack from the regime there?
Which I like how he unskeptically just repeats the government talking point that there was a chemical attack by Assad on his own people. He knows that they never did an investigation. He knows there's no conclusion. He knows that the last two gas attacks have been proven to be false flags committed by the rebels. He knows that, yet he doesn't say any of that. Why? Because he's paid not to say that. And he throws it to this guy like, hey, what if we put... So he's got to bring it back to war. So what Willie is doing now is like, wait a minute, I hear what you're saying, but what's the bad going to happen if we pull out of Syria? Bam, because he's killing people at camp. So he's right back on script. Willie is right back on script. Did you see that? Do you see how, that's why he's a pro. It's like you don't even notice. He just dismissed everything Jeffrey Sachs just said. He dismissed it all and said, hey, what are the bad consequences of us pulling out after he does a gas attack? It ignores everything he just said. That's a pro. That's why that guy's out. He's wearing a pocket square as he advocates for war. That's why. That's good. When you're in a pocket square, come on.
Yeah, I think there are two problems with Professor Sachs's comments, although I certainly feel that sense of Middle East fatigue that we all have. And, of course, it's not just Syria. It's Iraq. It's Afghanistan. There.
It's Afghanistan. It's Somalia, Niger. Come on. Afghanistan, it's going to be 18 years. So he's trying to say the reason Jeffrey Sachs is saying that stuff, meaning saying that we started the war, it's a disaster and we better get out. So what he's trying to say is that this guy is reacting emotionally. He's fatigued. He's not really thinking it through. That's what he's saying. Here we go.
Been a whole series of things that have generated the kind of feeling that says, you know, let's just pull back. Let's get out of the world. Let's come back to the United States. I think there are two fundamental problems with that. One is the use of chemical weapons, I think, really does.
That's a double CK. That's what that is right there. Okay. Because this guy is so. That a chemical weapon. Right now, we're committing a genocide in Saudi with in Yemen with Saudi Arabia. We don't care about people. If we cared about people being poisoned by chemicals, we would be bombing Flint, Michigan. We don't care. And you see this guy's like, just like, what is he saying? Here we go.
And a response from the international community at a level of military strike. So I do support a strike here. And secondly, and I think Professor Sachs is correct to say this is a massive humanitarian disaster. I think the numbers are actually 600,000 dead and 14 million displaced. So I'm in complete agreement with him on the scale of this. But I would like to see the United.
I would like to see some more bombing and destruction. I understand 14 million people displaced, 600,000 killed, but. They use gas, so we need to kill a lot more people. So it's bad to kill people with gas, but it's okay to kill people with nice Christian bombs who, when they explode, they hug you to death, I guess, or something. I don't understand. So that's, again, just stupid. But Jeffrey Sachs.
States try and be part of the solution. And here, what I would do is look back to the Balkans in the 1990s, which looked somewhat like Syria of today. And there was eventually an international solution, and it included the U.S. and Russia working together. We got a long way to go to get there. But if we just step away from it, as attractive as that feels to us, I don't think it's the right decision, either for the country or for the international community.
So now that guy, just so you're clear on who this guy is, he's an admiral and he's a liar. He is the worst kind of person in the world. Because I know the truth about Syria. He was just, and I'm a nightclub jagoff comedian who doesn't know, and I know better than him. That's how I know he knows. And because he just got told it by a professor from Columbia University. And so now he's continuing not to know. And I'm going to guarantee you he's being paid by a defense contractor or somebody who's making money off of this war. That guy right there, scum of the earth, liar. That's who that guy is. And he's an admiral. And there isn't a pit in hell low enough for guys like that.
I don't think it's attractive, but I think we have to understand how this happened. This happened because of us. These 600,000 are not just incidental. We started a war to overthrow a regime. It was covert. It was Timber Sycamore. People can look it up. The CIA operation.
Timber Sycamore. Look it up.
together with Saudi Arabia, still enshrouded in secrecy, which is part of the problem in our country. A major war effort, shrouded in secrecy, never debated by Congress, never explained to the American people, signed by President Obama, never explained. And this created chaos. And so just throwing more missiles in right now is not a response.
My only concern...
It's, by the way, not to walk away, to go to the UN Security Council, as the Admiral says, to agree with Russia on a strategy for ending the fight. But ending the fight means that we stop trying to overthrow a government, that we stop trying to support rebels who are committed to overthrowing the government. That is where this war continues, because we to this day back rebels that are trying to overthrow a government contrary to international law, contrary to the UN Charter, contrary to common sense, contrary to practical path. We can't do it. And it's just creating ongoing crisis to the extent of facing an imminent confrontation with Russia.
So I think this is...
Goes against common sense, goes against the UN Charter, goes against international law. We're doing all that.
That was a segment from the Jimmy Dore, that's D-O-R-E show. And Jimmy is on the right side of this. He may not articulate his thoughts as in a way that some people would appreciate, but he is being completely honest, and I appreciate his honesty and the fact that he's done his homework, and as has Jeffrey Sachs. And so just to summarize, Jeffrey Sachs is saying this was Obama's war. By the way, it was Hillary Clinton's war. And by extension, Amy Goodman. You know, when you support something and it's wrong and there's 600,000 casualties and 10 million refugees and total chaos, you got to own it. You got to be responsible for that. You can't have it both ways. And we seem to give a pass to everyone if they're on the right side politically, instead of the right side with truth. So when was the last time the corporate left, the Democrats, acknowledged, even were proud of the fact that their leader, Hillary Clinton, caused all the death and destruction in Libya and caused death and destruction in Syria and caused a coup in Honduras? And with her, Gloria Nuland, who was the person head of the State Department's Russian desk, caused the fascists to come power in the Ukraine. And the media misrepresented the truth on each and every one of these issues. So if the media is a part of the problem, and the government is the problem, and Obama is the problem, and everything he promised was a lie, and he got a Nobel Prize in peace, and was one of the biggest warmongers in American history, started more wars than any other president in American history. What does it say about we the people continuing to trust anything that any of these people on either side say? And now you know the truth. There was no missile attack. There was no sarin gas. So why is it that the Pentagon, the CIA, the National Security Agency, all of whom have input into the president's intelligence brief each day, why would they not know this? Why do we present truth on this show? And they have all those resources, and they never share the truth with the media and the American public. And the media goes right along with it. So you got a little webcaster like Jimmy Dore. Well, not a little webcaster. He's certainly a webcaster, and he does a good job, and I commend him for it. But he does not have the resources, yet he has the truth. What does that tell you? And he's alone. There are other webcasters out there who have the truth. It's just no one at NBC and PBS and NPR and CNN. They don't have the truth. And yet they're very smart, very educated, very bright people. They choose not to engage in this. That's willful neglect. Now, so you have a thought on that? You'll have a chance to call in and share it. Now listen to why this is important. This segment I chose because it gives motive. This is U.S. Army General Wesley Clark giving a short talk, and he's given the main talk at about five locations on We intended to invade countries. We intended to engage in change, but we needed a linchpin. 9/11 was the linchpin.
Pentagon. Right after 9/11, about 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the Joint Staff who had used to work for me. And one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you got to come in. You got to come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, "No." He says, "We've made the decision. We're going to war with Iraq." This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, "We're going to war with Iraq? Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." So I said, "Well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to Al-Qaeda?" He said, no. He says, "There's nothing new that way. They just made the decision to go to war with Iraq." He said, "I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we got a good military and we can take down governments." And he said, "I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail." So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, "Are we still going to war with Iraq?" And he said, "Oh, it's worse than that." He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, and he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said, "This is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran." This is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq.
My fellow citizens, at this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger.
And then Syria.
We had a chance to talk about a wide range of international issues, including the situation in Syria. And I have to say that all of us who've been seeing the terrible pictures coming out of Syria and Homs recently recognize it is absolutely imperative for the international community to rally and send a clear message to President Assad that it is time for a transition, it is time for that regime to move on, and it is time to stop the killing of Syrian citizens by their own government.
Lebanon.
They both had different reasons, the State Department and the White House, for wanting Israel to do it, encouraging them to do it, supporting them. Our Air Force worked very closely with the Israeli Air Force for months before this, not necessarily with a deadline, knowing when it would happen. It was always going to be whenever there was an incident, they would take advantage of an incident. The word I used was fortunate timing. When Hezbollah grabbed some of the Israeli soldiers in early July, that was then a pretext, I think that's the only word, for a major offensive that had been in the works a long time.
Libya.
Today we can definitively say that the Gaddafi regime has come to an end. The last major regime strongholds have fallen. The new government is consolidating the control over the country. And one of the world's longest serving dictators is no more.
Somalia.
Well, violence isn't only on the rise in Afghanistan. In fact, it looks like America's shadow wars have now increased by 1. Drone strikes have long been reported in Pakistan and Yemen, but now there's news that a week ago, a U.S. drone aircraft fired on 2 leaders of the Somalian organization Al-Shabaab.
Sudan.
President Obama is sending 100 combat-equipped troops to Central Africa to advise local forces on getting rid of one of the continent's most vicious operatives, Joseph Kony, the head of the Lord's Resistance Army, a group responsible for atrocities across the region. It's the first open deployment of U.S. ground combat power to Africa since the Black Hawk Down incident in Somalia in the 1990s that killed 18 troops. U.S. troops may wind up now in Uganda, South Sudan, the Central African Republic, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. It's part of a growing military effort to engage in Africa.
Finishing off Iran. I said, "Is it classified?" He said, "Yes, sir." I said, "Well, don't show it to me." And I saw him a year or so ago, and I said, you remember that? He said, sir, I didn't show you that memo. I didn't show it to you.
I'm sorry, what did you say his name was?
I'm not going to give you his name.
So go through the...
There you have Wesley Clark, and he laid it out right in front of the whole world, and you've yet to have a single member of the mainstream media challenge them. We weren't attacked. We weren't going to be attacked. There was no danger to us from any of these countries, these seven countries. These were sovereign nations, and we went in for regime change in each case. Always using an excuse. Now, here you have Jeffrey Sachs saying there it was a secret CIA operation. He named the operation. And we sent in agitators and terrorists, and then we used the reaction of Gaddafi that was at peace at that time to against these provocateurs, and then reversed it so that it was Gaddafi killing his own citizens when Gaddafi never killed any of his own citizens. And that's the media being fully complicit in the lies of the government agencies. That's the country we live in. Just to talk back, we're in our talk back segment now. You can call it 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888, and share your thoughts and opinions. This is an open forum. We do not believe in censorship. So you have an opportunity to tell us what you think. Let's start with Jeff from New Jersey. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air.
How you doing, Gary? Good to see
doing
you today.
Great. Thank you.
Good. Listen, I think that our current situation in the world is that we have some evil that has risen to the top. And people like the media, Democratic, Republicans, they all tend to be the puppets. And I think they've traded their souls for what they feel is going to be a better life for them. So we don't matter. And we're not going to make sense out of the things that they do, the wars that they start, the poisons they put into the food. I never thought that, it puzzles me how they pollute things and then turn around and eat the same things, you know. So it's a suicidal mission. There is a book now, just heard the guy talk about it. I don't remember his name. But it's the Organization of Psychopathy, which is a study of evil throughout the history. And it just seems like people are saying in this administration that these people seem like the same people that were with Hitler. Now, I'm into the, religious, and perhaps it's the reincarnations, it's the spirits that have been thrown down from heaven. But what we're seeing at the top, pharmaceuticals that sell drugs that kill you, policymakers and business owners that are people running businesses that are poisoning the earth. Take the Koch brothers and the oil industry that continuously knew that this was climate change and continuously wanted to use oil anyway, and still do, and still want to use more. So they don't really care about the common man. And I think what we're going to have to do is separate ourselves and not participate in their systems. Like you said, getting off the grid, taking your monies out of banks and doing whatever you have to do to not support their systems. That's the only way I think that we can really affect change and look into each other, basically work within the communities that we're in. Go to work helping each other, because we're all we have at this point in time. It is an us against them type of thing, and we're not going to change it unless we get into the government, we change our government, we change who our representatives are. But like you've been saying, and like a lot of folks have been saying, the Democratic and Republican Party are now pretty much one, and they are running the protection for those in the deep state. And one of those things about Obama was, I know under him, a lot of things didn't get accomplished that he said would get accomplished. But I also know that I also remember, three attempts on his life. I know you've been to the White House, and you can see how far it is from the back gate to the front of the White House. And I don't understand how someone could get over the fence, run that 200 yards, and get seven rooms deep into the White House with the knife, and no one see anything. That is absolutely impossible. I worked at a large corporate headquarters for a pharmaceutical, and we had sensors in the grass. So if they don't have that technology at the White House, then we're a little lacking. But, there were a couple of incidents where his security was really bad.
Okay. But you got to separate out the I understand what you're saying. Most of what you I think is reasonable. What I would add is that we need multiple political parties. We have to break the power of the two-party system. The trouble is, and this is something for us to consider, you can't reform any paradigm. People in power don't allow themselves to be reformed. First, they're more often than not, if they're that attached to power, they're very sociopathic. They may be charming, but they're not about to surrender anything. Secondly, no group of people are going to say, we've made a big mistake, shame on us, let's let wiser, more insightful people take our place. That's not going to happen either. So individuals can decide that they no longer want to participate in a political system or any other system and leave it. But the system's never changed. Institutions don't change. And individuals in those institutions have to have an allegiance with the founding principles to get into and run it. They're not going to hand the baton off to anyone who's going to run in the opposite direction. So I can either put my energy into showing healthier, better, more prudent and practical ways of living and responsible ways of dealing with crisis. But it shouldn't be an obsession. In other words, don't put your energy into thinking about what's wrong with the world if you can't put your energy in how to correct it. And how many times have we heard the critics? I've actually seen them in marches. I saw this everywhere in Occupy Wall Street, people saying, down with the establishment. And yet their credit cards were establishment banks. Their hamburgers and hot dogs and french fries were establishment food. Their clothing was establishment clothing. Their car was establishment car. Everything about them was establishment. So it was just empty rhetoric from my perspective. There was no real sacrifice. There was no authentic change. I'm going to judge a person by, do you do something that matches what you say? We have too many people in power who simply have empty words that they spout. So when you give up your credit cards, when you take your money out of their banks and put them into a credit union bank, when you stop buying exploitation clothes made in Bangladesh and India and buy American-made and buy union-made, that means that you're actually making a change. When you give up their food and start eating organic, locally produced food, when you shop at co-ops and cooperatives and farmers markets and small health food stores, then you're taking money out of their pocket. Now, you or I or a million of the rest of us do it. It doesn't matter. They can afford that loss. What if 10 million Americans began to disconnect their grid or buy in their box stores, and we don't vote for their politicians, and we don't watch their media, and we don't buy the products advertised on that media, left or right? Then they feel it. And the idea of power being absolute is nonsense. It is completely fluid. You only have power when someone decides that you should have an authority over what they think and say and eat and do and study and vote and where you live and what you buy for that house where you live. All that is what they control. They've mastered the art of Edward Bernays' propaganda to the point where they virtually have an invisible control over so much of our lives. I did a lecture last night, and I filmed it because a lot of people couldn't be at this final retreat I'm doing, and so I decided to fly in my film crew, and last night, this morning, this afternoon, all day tomorrow, and it's over, I'm doing about six lectures and I'm filming, and the one last night was, what is the true meaning of your life? Because without an understanding of meaning, then how do we know who we really are? if the only meaning we have for our life is our career, if we're just a careerist, so we can talk about our job and what we do in that job, that's not talking about who you are. And there was a time in American history where people had a really good grounding from multi-generations of extended families, all of whom had an input in helping you develop your character, because you were measured by the quality of that character, meaning your morals, your position of compliance to help others in the society. And that's one of the reasons people didn't lock their doors. People, you know, didn't go around stealing from everyone. You could walk the streets at night safely, because as a society, we all shared certain common basic values. We understood who we were because we had wise men and women, our aunts, uncles, grandfathers, grandmothers, who instilled in us this higher sense of being. And that was to our advantage. We don't have that so much today. There's certainly good parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles certainly still giving good input to younger people. But that's the exception, not the rule. So when those people elevate themselves into positions of power, then what we have is we have defective minds in power, and you're going to have a defective outcome to the power. So you're not going to change the person. You're not going to change their perception, which would change their reality. So you have to change being connected to that person. You have to disconnect. President Nixon was the most powerful man in the world, and then we went to bed. And the next morning, he's on a helicopter going to San Simeon, California, with no power whatsoever. The last shot of him was him in the hands in the air with the V sign on each hand, and he was disgraced because we, the people, took away the power. We no longer believed him, and we no longer trusted him. Sometimes it happens all at once. Other times it's by attrition over a period of time. And I believe that this president and his administration will lose power because, and won't be elected again, because people don't trust such a person, because he's abused the power he was given the special place of having. So look to getting off the grid, their grid. Disconnect from everything that has had an influence on you that allows them to have power over us. I appreciate your call, and I appreciate everyone listening. Have a nice day, everyone.